All right, welcome back to season 3 of Press Any Button. I'm Nikki.
I'm Eric.
And today we're going to be taking an adventure to the deep, deep caves of Antarctica, where we battle cavemen and turn into bats. That's pretty much what Cave Story is, right, Eric?
That is 100% what Cave Story is about.
All right, today we are talking about a little indie game I'm sure no one's ever heard of called Cave Story.
Everybody's heard of this game. What are you talking about?
I'm being sarcastic. Yeah, this is a pretty popular game.
Okay.
All right, Cave Story is a 2004 2D Metroidvania style platform adventure game developed by Studio Pixel. You play as, quote, a robot with no memory who awakens in a cave of a floating island. You gain access to new areas as you power up weapons by collecting triangular experience crystals and solve various platforming puzzles. Quote speaks to NPCs scattered around the world in order to learn more about the world and its inhabitants. Spoiler warning. We will be talking about different endings of the game, the story, and other things that you might not want to know if you haven't played the game before.
Including secret endings.
That won't be secret after this. All right, Eric, are you ready to let me know all about the history of Cave Story?
I am.
Awesome. I can't wait to hear about it. The only thing I know is one person pretty much made the whole entire game, right?
Right.
All right.
That's it. That's all you need
to know.
That covers all my history. One person made this game.
Darn, I stole your thunder. Sorry, babe.
That's okay. But yeah, I am really excited about this game. This is one of my favorite games of all time, if not my favorite game of all time.
Yeah. So much so that you said you do eventually want to get a Cave Story tattoo, right?
Yeah, eventually.
I want you to get a Cave Story tattoo. That'd be cool. And like so much of the artwork would make a really cool tattoo.
Yeah, and that's kind of where I would have trouble is just narrowing it down.
You could have a whole Cave Story sleeve if you wanted.
Yeah.
Then you could just pick all the things.
Pick everything.
Don't limit yourself, babe. Don't limit yourself.
Your only limit is financial.
Whatever.
So yeah, so going into the past, like Nikki said in the intro, this game was developed by Studio Pixel, with Studio Pixel consisting of just one person named Daisuke Amaya, who goes by Pixel.
Okay, yeah. Pixel's way easier.
Yeah, we'll just call him Pixel.
That's a cool like nickname too. I'm kind of jelly.
It's the only one.
All right, so 2004, right?
Yeah.
Is that where you're starting, or does it start the story to start before that?
It starts before that.
Oh my gosh. All right, let's start this journey.
Okay, so Pixel went to college for coding and credits one of his dorm mates for helping him learn how to make games.
Cool.
While he was in college, Pixel made an audio sequencer called Org Maker, which he then used to make the music compositions for his games. The successor to Org Maker, called PX Tone, is freeware and can still be downloaded today. So if you want to use Pixel Sequencer to make your own jams, you can actually do that.
Wait, so you're starting with him making the sequencer?
Yeah.
So he already had made some games before this? Because you said he made music for his games with that, right?
Yeah, he hadn't really made anything substantial at that point.
Just like little for fun kind of things?
Just like fucking around, mini games, stuff like that.
Gotcha. So this starts by him creating the sequencer.
Yeah, which he would later then use to make music for everything.
Cool.
So Pixel started working on Cave Story while he was still in college. Like I said, while it wasn't the first game he ever made, it was the first one that would be considered more than just a mini game. Pixel never really made an outline or plan for the game, instead just making it piece by piece. He would later admit that the lack of planning caused problems down the line, because he did not have dedicated map editing and data management tools.
That's awesome. That sounds like something I would do. Like, I just want to get started, and you just don't even think ahead. And you're like, whatever. I'll figure it out as I go.
Yeah.
Hey, it worked out, though.
Yeah.
The hardest part, really, is just getting started, like, half the time. You know, because it's so easy to just discourage yourself. Like, oh, it won't be good. This is going to take forever. It's going to be hard. That kind of stuff. So if that's what gets you going, is just starting, even if you don't have a plan. Hey,
yeah.
If it works, it works.
I mean, he did say it caused him problems down the line.
You live and learn, right? That's true. His first game. So I'm sure like the next game he made, he probably planned it out a little bit more.
Yeah, you know, probably. like I said, Pixel made all the art for the game, everything from sprites to animations to the drawing scene and the end credits. When he was designing characters, he tried to use brighter colors so they would contrast against the dark backgrounds in the caves.
Yeah.
So that's why you see, like, you know, a lot of lab coats. You have, like...
Purple hair. Like, Misery has purple hair.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And, like, Curly Brace has blonde hair.
And the bunny people were, like, you know, white and stuff.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
In order to make each level memorable, he would design levels around a single theme, such as warmth for the egg corridor and arid and oppressive for the sand zone. So each like area has its own theme that he's designing around.
That's cool. Sometimes when you give yourself like parameters, it kind of helps you not want to put like everything in the kitchen sink in one level, you know?
Yeah. It took Pixel 5 years to complete Cave Story, mostly working on it late at night in his free time. And by the time he had finished the game, he was working a full-time job developing bank software.
Wow. That's cool.
Yeah, so it went
It sounds like Boring City during the night and Creative Adventure. Wait, Boring City during the day and Create Adventure during the night.
Yeah. Cave Story was released for free on Windows in December 2004. While the original game was in Japanese, there were fan translation patches that would soon follow for several different languages. Ports of Cave Story were made for the Wii in 2010, the DS in 2010, the 3DS in 2011, and the Switch in 2017.
Cool.
And yeah, you can still download the free version off his website, but there's also, I think, the Plus version on like Steam, and that would be the one on like...
That's the one we played, right?
Yeah, that would be the one on Switch and all those other consoles.
So do you know how long it took before fans started creating like the different translations for it?
That's a great question. I honestly have no idea, but I know around the time I played it was either 2004 or 2005.
So not that long.
I don't think it took that long for fans to get their own translations out there.
Cool. So you were in high school when you played this?
Yeah, it was either, it would have either been like my senior year or first year of college.
Okay.
I think it was kind of in between that time.
Yeah. Yeah, because if it came out in December 2004, we would have still been in high school. But then by the time it got translated to English, yeah, we probably were already, like, graduated.
Yeah.
It might have been the summer in between or something.
So when Pixel was asked to reflect on how he felt after finally releasing the game, he said that the joyous moment took a backseat to simple relief, something to the effect of, "That's the last time I'll ever work on something that's such a pain."
Lies. We know he made more games. But I could see how he would feel that way. You know, working on something by yourself for 5 years in your spare time.
Yeah.
He's probably tired.
Yeah, on top of doing like a full-time job.
Yeah, I would have been exhausted.
Yeah. Cave Story received widespread critical acclaim after release, with Electronic Gaming Monthly referring to Pixel as a pioneer for Western indie game developers, and Superplay magazine ranking Cave Story first on its list of best freeware games of all time. Yeah, so like I said, it was a free game that he spent 5 years of his time working on. Yeah, and I think it's pretty incredible. You do that, and then you're like, just put it on my website so anyone can download it.
Hey, it worked out for him.
Yeah.
Like pretty much when I was trying to do some research for, you know, the future and stuff, like almost any review that I saw, like on IGN or like any of those websites, they all scored this game really high. Like people really love this game.
Yeah.
Think it's perfect almost.
You can tell it was a work of like passion and love. There's a lot that went into this game.
Yeah.
A lot of effort.
a lot of soul.
A lot of soul. A lot of heart. It's got heart. So I got five fun facts.
Yay, my favorite. I missed fun facts, you know?
Yeah.
It's been a while since we've recorded a podcast, so.
It hasn't been very fun without the fun facts.
I don't know. I need fun facts in my life every day.
So fun fact number one. The file size of the original release of the game is less than 1 megabyte as a zip file.
Holy crap.
To put that in context, you can fit 700 copies of the game on a single CD. You can fit 32,000 copies of the game on an internal memory of a Switch. You can even store the game on a single floppy disk.
Wow. Dang.
Yeah, it was a small game.
I haven't even seen a floppy disk in Lord knows how long. Now, do we even have any here? Do you have any floppy disks around?
I might have them like buried somewhere.
That is crazy.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. I can't believe it's that small.
Yeah. Well, the Switch version that we played isn't that small. It's because, you know, they redid the art. They have music and stuff for it.
Okay. Yeah. So yeah. That makes sense.
I'm talking about
the original OG.
Yeah. The original release. And once you unzipped.
Like the one you played.
And once you unzipped it, it was like, I think 1.3 megabytes or something. Okay. So that added a little bit of space.
But it could still fit on a floppy or a zip disk. Remember zip disks?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. You could fit like 100 megabytes on like a zip disk, right?
Yeah, something like that.
Fun fact number two. Originally, when Pixel was designing enemies, his plans were to base them off of bars of soap.
What?
Basically starting with a bar of soap and then adding arms and legs. So if you ever wondered why Balrog looks so weird, it's because he's based on a bar of soap.
That is so random.
Yeah.
Very creative, but really random. Yeah. I kind of thought he looked like a toaster.
Yeah, he does kind of look like a toaster. But you can see some other enemies basically have that kind of blocky shape too.
Yeah.
Like I think of those like.
But he eventually moved on from that because.
Yeah, he did.
I mean, there's like all kinds of enemies in this game.
But he was showing off like some of his original sketches for the game. It's like you see all these like blocks that have like different like arms and legs and weird spots and stuff. Oh my gosh.
Can you send those to me? I can post them on our Instagram.
Yeah.
Like, that would be cool to see.
And see if I can dig them up. It was part of a video, but yeah, maybe the drawings exist by themselves somewhere out there. Okay. So fun fact number three, the characters Quote and Curly Brace are named after the ASCII characters of the same name. They are named that way because that's how you would initiate a message to the user in the programming language Pixel was using. So
wait, what?
So yeah, so if you're writing like something that, you know, the user would need to see like a message or something, you'd use either like a quote or a curly brace to like.
Wait, what's a curly brace?
A curly brace?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like a brace, you know, like a parentheses. So you have the parentheses.
Is it like the parentheses, but with like the little point thing?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
That's a curly brace.
I never knew what that was called.
Yeah, that's curly brace. That's one of the characters.
Awesome. Well, I knew she was one of the characters, but I didn't know that was called that, so I didn't put the two together.
Yeah.
So interesting. So
they're
both cool.
Named after the ASCII characters.
That's so random. I love it.
Fun fact number four. There's a very difficult secret level you can unlock called the Bloodstained Sanctuary. In order to unlock it, you have to save Curly Brace after defeating the core for the first time. Drain the water from her, restore her memory. You also need to save Professor Booster by not talking to him while he lay dying so you can receive the 2.0 version of the booster later in the game. So yeah, you have to kind of do all these extra side things that you might not necessarily think to do.
Have you done this?
Oh yeah, yeah.
Oh, okay.
In fact, I'll let you play a little bit of the Bloodstained Sanctuary on my game file.
Oh, that's that really hard one, right?
Yeah.
Where, yeah. Yeah. That, I don't think I would ever be able to beat that.
It's a very difficult, like, oh final level.
Yeah, lots of spikes, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay, and then fun fact number five, there are three secret weapons in the game.
What? Three secret weapons?
Yeah, the first one is the bubble line, which
okay,
is...
Okay, we got that
yeah,
one.
Found in the fireplace of the assembly building. It fires bubbles and is kind of weak and lame, but yeah. It's okay.
It's okay once you power it up, but yeah, it's yeah. Like the lamest of, out of all the weapons.
Yeah. The second one is called Nemesis. You can trade your blade for it at the little house at the outer wall, which I don't think you ever found.
No. Dang it.
It basically works the opposite from your other weapons, with the experience triangles making it weaker. If you make it to the secret stage, the Bloodstained Sanctuary, Curly will be using this gun, shooting backwards from your shoulders. The third one is called the Spur. In order to get it, you need to decline trading your Polestar for Curly's machine gun, travel back to the starting area near the end of the game, and talk to the blacksmith you stole your Polar Star from, who will finish the gun, turning it into the Spur. The Spur doesn't require any experience triangles, and instead you charge it by holding the fire button and it shoots a beam across the room that continuously damages enemies.
I will never understand how people find these things. Like, my brain does not work like that. Yeah, let me decline this and then go back to the beginning and do this thing and see if it changes anything. Like,
yeah, I don't know how you
would, do you even know to try these things? It's crazy.
I don't know how you would how you would have figured that out, but yeah, it's like, it's almost one of those things you look up and then you go, oh, okay, like, let me go back and try it. The Spur is actually one of my favorite weapons in the game, but yeah, it makes the platforming much more difficult, because, you know, you can use a machine gun when it's leveled up to kind of hover.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
So you're basically getting rid of that for a more powerful gun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That would make it a lot harder. I also have a fun fact.
Okay.
It's not technical, but fun fact number 6, the experience triangles look like tiny little Dorito chips.
Oh yeah, yeah.
They look like nacho cheese Doritos, and you're just collecting all the little Dorito chips.
I guess they kind of do, yeah.
Unofficial fun facts brought to you by Nikki.
Very good fun fact, Nikki.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thanks for contributing. All right, so yeah, moving on from the fun facts, we could talk a little bit about the story of the game.
Yeah, sure.
So did you follow what was going on?
I did a little bit. I think I made the mistake of kind of like spacing it out too much, like, because we had a lot longer to play this game than we normally would, and so I think I made the mistake of kind of spreading it out a little too much where I would forget what happened last time I played.
Yes.
But I did go back and watch like some speed runs and like read like a synopsis of the story so I could have a good grasp of what happened.
Yeah, the best way to play the game is to beat it in like 2 or 3 games, just playing it straight.
Yeah, like just like all together, like in 1 week or something. That would be probably the smartest way.
Yeah, but just to jog your memory. Okay, so yeah, you're a robot, you have no memory, you're waking in this cave on a floating island, and you start exploring the caves. You meet the Mimiga, which are basically sentient bunnies native to the island, super friendly. Like,
yeah, I like the Mimigmas.
Mimigma.
I call them bunny people.
Bunny people works. So you meet Sue, who's a human who's been turned into a Mimiga, and then her brother Kazuma and their mother Mamorin, who are humans who were part of a research expedition sent to the island along with Professor Booster and the Doctor. You later learn that the Doctor kind of forced himself into the party and was primarily after an artifact on the island called the Demon Crown. The Doctor found the Demon Crown, which gave him special powers along with control of two henchmen, Balrog, the toaster looking guy, and the witch Misery. The Doctor's goal is to use the special red flower to turn the normally peaceful Mimiga into berserk monsters and use them to attack the surface using the floating island as the flying fortress.
Very complicated stuff.
Which sounds like a really great plan, you know, just flying around, attacking random cities, I guess.
But yeah, throwing, making like, everyone evil.
Throwing like these crazy bunnies on them.
Yeah, brilliant.
Brilliant.
Like foolproof.
What could ever go wrong? Okay, so while exploring the island, you also meet your companion, Curly Brace, another robot with no memory of why she's there. You eventually find out that you and Curly were originally sent to destroy the Demon Crown from the surface, which you did, but the Demon Crown can't be destroyed for good unless its creator is killed. So it's reformed, and the Doctor was able to obtain it, which caused both of you to kind of like boot back up. There are 3 different endings to the game. A bad ending, which you escape the island, which is Kazuma, and then you don't actually stop the Doctor, and he
I got that ending on accident.
Yeah. The normal ending, which you defeat the Doctor and then escape with the research folks.
Yes, and I got that ending too.
And then a secret good ending where you save Curly and you end up saving the entire island from falling.
I did not get that ending.
Yeah,
I got 2 out of 3, though. That ain't bad.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
I mean, even though one of them's kind of not really beating the game.
Yeah, one of them is literally just saying, yes, I would like to escape the island. When Kazuma asks.
Yeah, so very cool story.
Yeah.
I'm very creative. I probably wouldn't be able to think of something like that.
Yeah, I thought it was pretty good for just kind of making it up as he went along.
Yeah, for real. I like the fact that Quote's not trying to save a girl or a princess or something, you know?
Yeah, that's an improvement.
Yeah. And I will say, so at the beginning you start but you don't know you're a robot.
Yeah.
And then you find that out as you play.
Exactly.
So plot twist.
Yeah. I like how it kind of just doesn't give you any backstory. Just kind of lets you start playing immediately.
Yeah.
I like games that don't try to force too much at the beginning. It's let me play around and let me see if I actually am going to like this game before you throw too much story on top of me.
Yeah. Same. If you have to hold my hand too much, it makes me worry about how the rest of the game's going to be, you know? Is it not going to be intuitive? Is it going to be frustrating? That kind of stuff.
So what were some of your pros about the game?
Okay, so I like this game. It's very easy to pick up. You know, the controls are easy. There's not too much you have to really learn or memorize, you know? It's pretty simple. Kind of like your classic controls you would have in Mario or something.
Yeah.
You're not too different.
Yeah, and in fact, I think the quote for Sprite was inspired by Mario.
Oh, cool.
So yeah, I like the fact that it does a really good job of teaching you how to play without actually spelling it out for you. There's no tutorial because Pixel hates tutorials.
Yes, me and Pixel are one and the same.
Yeah, no tutorials, no instructions. You start by learning the basic game mechanics of moving and jumping, and then, you know, you find the gun, and then you start learning that on your own.
Yeah, and then you slowly find more and more weapons, and it gradually gets harder and stuff
and
as
then,
you go.
Yeah,
like any good game.
Then you get the booster, and you can kind of do boosty stuff. Oh, and the machine gun, which you can kind of use to hover and stuff like that.
Yeah.
As long as you don't decline it.
Yeah, don't decline it. Well, unless you're trying to do that one special mission, but it does. It helps. It made it getting through the levels a lot easier to have the hover.
Oh yeah.
Function.
Yeah, it's you kind of have to decide if you want to have easy platforming or a better gun.
I also think it's really nice that they have save points all over the place. They're very often you come across save points. So when you see one of those, save, because if you die, then you have to start where you saved last. And sometimes if you forget to save, that's not good. So I like that there's save points all over the place.
Yeah, I agree with that. It's very easy to die.
Yes.
So one of the things I liked was that the controls feel really good, like you were saying, which is pretty important to a platformer. The platforming is fun. Shooting enemies is fun. Between the booster and the machine gun, there are lots of ways to get from point A to point B. Really fun game to just control the character and platform.
Yeah. I also like that you can play single or you can play two players. I played mostly through it as two players with you, which helped a lot.
Yeah.
But it was fun too, because we could help each other. I don't know. I just thought it was fun with two players.
Yeah,
it was fun by yourself too, but
they did a really good job of adding that, because that wasn't in the original game. That's a feature of the Plus version.
Yeah.
But yeah, at any point in the game while you're playing, you can pop in a second player, and then if you know they leave, you can just drop them. And really easy, straightforward to do it. You don't have to turn the game off and on or anything, or play a special two-player game.
Yeah.
Just anytime you're playing the single player, you can just pop in a second player.
Yeah, if you need help, Eric, come help me.
Yeah, it's really nice.
Yeah, but it works well single or as a team. It's fun, both ways.
Yeah. One of the things I liked was the story, of course. I love the story.
Yeah.
It's
a good story.
It doesn't feel like it gets in the way of playing the game. And at the same time, there's a lot to discover if you want. So if you want to go through and talk to all the NPCs about all the stuff,
yeah,
you can learn more about the island and your environment and the people and all that stuff. Or you can just pretty much ignore it and keep playing the game. And I really like the different characters he designed. Like, I like Sue, Curly Brace, Misery, Balrog. They all have like pretty cool personalities.
Yeah.
Even some of the minor characters are great, like Malco, the bomb building robot in the bushlands.
And the lady, what's her name? Jinka, the lady that lost all her puppies. So there's like a part of the story we have to go like collect all these puppies for this old lady. I like that there's a lot of replayability with this game because, you know, there's like the three different endings. You can play as two players, one player, and then there's like some other special missions and stuff you can do if you want to as well. You know, like getting that special secret weapon and things like that. So although it's kind of like a shorter game, you can replay it a lot of different ways.
Yeah, there are lots of secrets in it.
Also, another one is the music. The music is really good.
I love
it. And it goes with
the
story, it goes with the game really well. And it adds to the game instead of distracting from the game.
Also, I want to add that Pixel doesn't really have a musical background at all. So the way he did his music is very much the same way he did the game itself, which is, you know,
just
putting notes together that sound good.
Yeah, just did it as he kind of made it up as he went along. Yeah, and like I've tried to use a sequencer to make our rap beats and stuff. It is kind of hard.
Yeah,
like,
it takes a little bit.
And I don't have a lot of music experience. I did like choir, but that's not really, I don't know, that's different. But yeah, it's not easy to just make music.
Yeah, just to
pick
up.
Some people make it seem really easy, but it's not.
And I would also like to go ahead and pre-apologize since I made the rap beat. And, you know, I'm still trying to learn how to make rap beats.
It's fine. Don't apologize, babe. What's something else you like, Eric?
One of the things I liked were all the different weapons you can use. Even though it's kind of weak, from like the bubble gun to the spur, which is cool. Actually, the spur is one of my favorite guns to use.
It helps. That's the one where they like drop down, right?
No, that's the fireball.
Oh, my bad.
The spur is the one we didn't really get.
Oh, okay.
You have to get it instead of the machine gun, but it shoots a laser across the entire room.
Yeah, I think it's cool because they have all these different weapons, but it's not just for no reason. Like each weapon is specifically designed to come into play for like specific scenarios.
Yeah,
so some
exactly.
Guns work better in certain scenarios and some work better in others. Like the one I was just talking about, the fireball one, it's like when you shoot the fireballs, they just kind of drop out of your gun and go to the ground. So if you're trying to shoot an enemy that's like in a pit, you can use that and it'll hit it. Whereas like if you try any of the other guns, it would just go over their head, you know?
Yeah.
So I think he did a good job of just making there be a reason to have all the weapons, not just, you know, just to have six guns or whatever.
Yeah, they're basically tools that you can use for solving different types of problems.
Yeah, you also get like a map. What are some of the other items you get?
You get a health refill. Yeah, you get map. You get
that potion.
Oh, the jellyfish juice. Yeah.
Juice, whatever.
Putting out fires. Yeah. And then the booster, which allows you, depending on which version of the booster you get, it will either just kind of boost you straight up. Or if you get the 2.0 version, you can boost in all four directions.
Yeah.
It kind of makes for some interesting platforming.
Yeah, so there's like a lot of other tools in addition to just your weapons that like help you do stuff.
I do find that funny that in order to get the upgraded booster, you basically have to ignore Professor Booster as he like lays dying. Seriously, if you drop down and talk to him, then he'll give you the booster and he'll die. If you don't, like he'll survive and make the upgraded version. So I don't know what it is about you talking to him, but
I know, right? That's random.
Yeah.
Another thing that I really liked about this game is the final boss fight.
Yeah.
I thought it was really unique and like more complex, you know, than just like Mario game or something. Like, spoiler alert, I'm gonna talk about the ending fight, but like, so the final boss fight is really like four or five boss fights all in one that you have to do like right after another.
Yeah, it's a three stage boss. Well, it's It's kind of like four stages.
Yeah. Like kind of like four stages.
Because there's misery, the first stage of the doctor, and then the second stage where he kind of like gets super buff.
Yeah.
And then the fourth one where he possesses the core.
Yeah. And you have to do that all together. If you die in the middle of that, there's no save point at the final boss fight. Yeah. So like if you die during like the third phase, well, you have to start all over again. I must also confess I did play on easy mode, but still, like, I thought it was challenging, but not like frustratingly challenging. And it might be, it's probably a lot harder on normal or like hard mode, but
yeah,
it's like more, for me, I don't like things to be overly like frustrating. I want to have fun. Yeah. I'm not trying to be the world's best video game player.
Yeah. It's one of those things too, where it's like a matter of learning the patterns. And once you kind of pick up on the patterns and then it becomes progressively easier.
Yeah. And you're like way better at learning the patterns of bosses and stuff, like a lot faster than me. You're like, yeah, you just got to duck when they do this. And when you see them do this, you know they're about to do that. And I'm like, what? What? Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Years of playing Mega Man.
But yeah, I'm like, I haven't played that many like side-scrolling platformer games.
Yeah.
And in all honesty, I don't know if it's really my genre, you know? I don't, like, I like them, but I don't know. I'm not like, gotta play all the platformer games. I don't know.
Yeah, I totally agree with you on the boss fights. I 100% agree. Some of the boss fight, like, I love how the boss fights will, like, take up, like, they'll be bigger than the screen that you're looking at. So you'll have your, like, tiny little character and this like really gigantic boss, like, you know, when it comes to like the core, you fight the core twice in the mm-hmm. two different versions.
Oh yeah.
But those fights are really cool. There's a final boss on the Bloodstained Sanctuary that's super cool. That also is kind of like that, where they're just this giant thing that you're kind of, your tiny little character is fighting.
Yeah.
But yeah, so the Bloodstained Sanctuary is kind of like, you know, how you have to beat all four phases of the doctor.
Mm-hmm.
Well, for the Bloodstained Sanctuary, you have to beat, you have to get through the entire stage. You have to beat a sub boss, and then you have to beat three phases of the final boss. All where if you die at any point, then you have to start all the way.
Holy moly.
Yeah.
That's intense.
Yeah. With no checkpoints.
And the last thing I have, which we already mentioned, but I still think it's awesome, is that you can get this game for free.
Yeah.
So if you're broke, you can go get this game for free and have a good quality game to play.
That's how I...
Because a lot of free games, I must confess, they're not that good.
It's true.
There's a reason. Well, sometimes there's a reason they're free, okay?
Yeah.
This is not one of them. This is very high quality, very good game that you can get for free.
Yeah. That's one of the things that was so impressive to me about it, is that it was one of the best games I've played, and then he also gave it away for free.
Yeah.
It just like really impresses me. and I'll have one other pro, and it's, I'm a huge fan of the art style, the pixel art style that he does.
Yeah.
Yeah. I absolutely love it. Like, I think it looks gorgeous.
Yeah. It is a really nice looking
game. Like the environments he created, mm-hmm. like the sprites, like everything goes together really well.
Yeah. All the enemies, like even the enemies and stuff look really cool. I think one of my favorite enemies is the crocodile that just comes up out of the sand randomly.
Yeah.
There's like these parts with little sand pits. And if you can't see the little crocodile at first, but if you jump on the sand pit, like just the snout of the crocodile comes up and like eats you.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's so creative.
Yeah. There are a lot of creative enemies in this game. Yeah.
Also, like the frogs, like those are like the big giant frogs that are like bigger than you. Those are pretty good. What are some of your other favorite enemies?
The one random ones in the sand zone where they have like, they're these like big faces that are bouncing around, and then you like, you kill it, and then it breaks down on all these like little ones tiny, with the giant like weird looking eyes. Like,
yeah.
Just the look and the design of that is so weird.
Yeah, it's just like, so many different kinds of enemies. I love it.
Yeah.
So, Eric, do you have... Is there anything you don't like about this game?
I wrote, none. This game is the perfect game. Yeah.
The only con I have is when I was playing it, I wanted a run option. That's the only this is really nitpicky, you know. Yeah. But there was some areas where I just wanted to run through, especially when I forgot to save and I was just trying to get back to where I was before. And it was like, nope, no run option. I kept trying to, even though I knew. Even though I knew it wouldn't work, I still tried to press B while I was walking. I'm like, dang it, run.
It's just ingrained in you that you should be able to run.
I know. I mean, you have run in Mario, you have run in Animal Crossing, you have run pretty much all the games I've played, you have a run option. Yeah. So I think, you know, it's just kind of like, why doesn't this one have it?
Yeah, kind of second nature, I guess.
Yeah. But that's it. I don't have a lot of cons for this game either. It's just really solid game.
Yeah, if you want a good Metroidvania style game.
Which I didn't even know that was like a term.
Metroidvania?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And what does that mean? Is that just like platformer side scrolling kind of game?
It's a specific type where you can kind of explore more.
Okay. But not too much.
So Metroid, it was one of the first platformers to really like not be going straight left to right, you know?
Okay. Oh, where you can go like back and forth.
Yeah. So you can go and you kind of explore your own ways and you kind of have to map it out and figure it out.
And okay. So that's like the difference between that and just like a regular platformer, side-scrolling platformer.
Yeah, and then Castlevania kind of would eventually expand on it. The first Castlevanias were just straight side-scrollers almost.
Mm-hmm.
But then the later versions really got into these kind of mazes.
Oh, okay.
Those two games really kind of define the genre of Metroid. That's why they kind of put them together.
Yeah, okay, gotcha. Yeah, I saw that when I was reading some stuff about the game and I was like, I've never heard that term before.
Yeah.
So I keep learning something new every day. Go me.
Way to go. Going on to strategy then.
Yeah.
I'm sure you had a bunch for that.
Yeah, you know how big I am on all the strategy things. Real quick, the first one I have is just like we already talked about, it's just using the correct weapon for the scenario you're in. You know, that helps a lot.
Yeah.
And also try to keep your weapons at full power if you can.
Yeah, because taking any form of damage basically causes your weapon experience to drop.
Yeah.
So, yeah, try to avoid getting hit, I guess.
Yeah. I like the mechanics of the weapon, too. I forgot to say that earlier, but I do like the whole aspect of having to keep it charged, like keep your power level charged.
Yeah.
Because in other games, it's like once you get the power up, you really can't lose it unless you die, you know, or something. So
yeah.
I think it's cool that it's more fluid in this game where like your power level can go up and down if you're not doing a good job.
Yeah. And then if you're getting a bunch of experience crystals or whatever, you can go back.
You mean
and,
Doritos?
Like, yeah, experience Doritos. You can go back and charge some of your other weapons, you know, like, okay.
Yeah.
Like, I'll try to
charge. That's what I would try to do, too. If I was full power from one, but low on another, I would try to switch over and try to have them all full power if I could.
Yeah, because you never know which weapon you're going to need.
Exactly.
So that covered two of mine, yeah. So, yeah, weapons or tools, keep your weapons leveled up.
Yeah.
The other one I had is there are a lot of secrets in this game.
Yeah.
Some of them will be way too complicated just to figure out
on
your own, probably. Unless you want to do that. I mean, you're free to try to do as much as you can on your own.
Yeah, I love those hardcore people that do that, but it ain't me.
My recommendation is to play through at least once without trying to find everything, like, or without, you know, trying to follow a walkthrough or anything.
Mm-hmm.
Just to kind of like experience it and try to see what you can figure out on your own. Because you will be able to figure some things out on your own.
Yeah. Like one of the strategies I have, it's kind of a subset of the secrets thing, but it's like explore the walls and stuff. Cause there's a lot of little secret pathways hidden in the rock walls that you can find. And it might lead to like a health.
Yeah.
What do you call like a health boost or
upgrade
thing? Yeah. Or upgrade, or there's just other things like hidden in the walls. But yeah, lots of secrets in this game.
Oh yeah. Well, you kind of have to, like, in order to find all the puppies and stuff.
Yeah.
You got to go into some of the secret walls.
Yeah. And lastly, for me, like I already said earlier, but save often. Just save. Anytime you see a save thing, save. Save.
Yeah. I like that. Save as much as possible.
It's kind of seems like it should be a given, but you know, sometimes you forget. Well, it's just like back in the day when you're doing like a report or something on Microsoft Word, and then you're like just chucking along, and your computer crashes, and you're like, no, why didn't I save? Yeah, just save every like 5 minutes.
Well, you know, autosave isn't really a thing. It didn't used to be a thing really. So yeah, the whole now you have to manually save. So
I know. Thank God for autosave.
All right. How about the future?
All right. So I didn't really find anything for the future, but I did find that last December they released Cave Story's Secret Santa. So like a Christmas kind of themed or version.
I haven't played that, so I need
like
to...
a side game or something, but it was only released in Japan.
Oh, maybe that's why. I mean
you might be able to find it online now, but I don't know if it will be in English.
Yeah,
but yeah, I thought that was pretty cute. So Cave Story Secret Santa is just a bite-sized side story of stealth and puzzle solving with familiar characters and settings from Studio Pixel's classic adventure. You play as a cowardly Mimiga named Santa, who is tasked with entering homes and returning stolen presents.
Yeah, Santa is one of the characters in the name and in the first game. So yeah.
Oh, okay, I didn't realize that. But yeah, you get to play as him, and then I guess you're kind of doing opposite of what Santa does. Instead of giving presents, well, you're returning stolen presents. So
someone stole Santa. Yeah, so someone stole all their presents, and yeah,
you're just getting them back. You're giving them back,
helping them out.
Cool. Yeah, so you'll have to look up and see if you can find that one. Download it or whatever.
Yeah, definitely. And I'll say that Studio Pixel's most recent game, which came out in 2014, which is a long time ago, is Kuro Blaster. It's another 2D platformer with the story being a satire on Japanese work culture. It's a great game, and I very highly recommend it.
So you've played it? You played it also. Do they have it out on Switch yet? Do you know?
Yeah, it's on Switch. That's how I played it. Yeah.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, it's on. I think it's on like almost everything. So it's on Pixel and iPhone and PC and Switch. So, I'm not sure about Xbox or PlayStation.
So do you know is he working on anything now or is he retired? Because that was almost 10 years ago.
Yeah, I checked his Twitter. I didn't see anything new, which I hope he's working on another project, but. Could be that, you know, he's just keeping it under wraps.
I hope so.
Yeah.
So, Eric, are you wondering if I completed the challenge or not?
Yeah. So, did you complete the challenge, Nikki?
Yeah, I'm sure. Well, you were there with me playing the whole time, so you kind of know. But the listeners don't know. Yes, I did. Well, I guess I did already kind of spoil it because I told everyone that I got the two endings. So,
yeah.
My bad. But yeah, I did. I beat the challenge, so suck it, Eric.
Well, that's really disappointing.
Oh, but I don't know. It's the first episode of season 3. I think we should just go ahead and wrap.
I did say I already made a beat, so.
Yeah, but you know, you could have just been playing around.
That's true.
Yeah, we kind of sucked at it. Sucked at keeping our secrets safe this episode. We kind of let them all out beforehand, so I guess if you were paying attention, you already knew we were gonna wrap. So if you were paying attention, good for you.
Yeah, and I'll say that I did use Pixel Sequencer PX Tone to make some of this beat.
Yeah,
and then also used another sequencer for other stuff.
Ooh, so but, fancy.
Yeah, and that's why. And also, it's like the first time I've tried to make a rap beat, which is why it's not very good.
It's great. Give yourself more credit.
I'm still learning.
All right. Well, I guess let's do this dang thing.
All right. Let's check it out. Darker or roster of the villain from Harry Potter, hotter than a globetrotter. When they call me, it's the doctor. I was tagging along, not
being a stalker. I was in for a song. Now I'm on the helicopter to an island in the sky, flying the red eye. Just a shy, nice guy who's here to comply with some stupid lab guys and a couple small fries. Didn't bother to say bye when I hung them out to dry. Why was it so easy? I assessed the first cave. The demon crown looked dreamy, sitting on a fresh grave. And every day's a vacay when I'm redisplaying Pompeii as a sachet away in my flying fortress sleigh.
Some call me Curly Brace. What's it to you? Gonna sit back and watch. What else would I do? You're not worth my time. To fight you will be a crime. As a matter of fact, isn't it your bedtime? Two robot soldiers, what tell could be older? It's like the weight of the world is on our shoulders. Go on, little quote, I'll slash your throat. You're a joke, I'll kick your ass, then have a smoke. A nice big toke to remember, you bloke. Hopefully someone will tell your folks. All right, Eric, I didn't think it was that bad. You need to stop being so hard on yourself.
Well, thanks.
Like, listeners, let us know what you thought about the rap beat. Did Eric do an okay job? Give him some, like, compliments or something. We gotta build his confidence over here.
Well, thank you.
All right, so Eric, are you ready for the super hard challenge that I'm about to give you?
Well, hopefully I'll learn about the challenge when I learn what the game is.
Do you want some hints
about the game?
Yeah,
I think I already kind of figured it out.
What? How would you ever have figured it out?
How did I figure it out? I think you just kind of told me.
It's a game.
What?
No, I didn't tell you. But it is a game we have been playing a lot together recently. Yeah,
it's a great game.
So your challenge is for Overcooked 2.
Yeah.
And what you have to do is get 3 stars on 10 levels in solo play.
Okay. Yeah, I think I can do
that. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this game, you can.
So
we've been playing it together as a team, which does make it a lot easier. But I think this challenge will be kind of difficult because you'll have to play all by yourself, which means you'll have to control more than one chef at a time.
Yeah. So it's 3-starring 10 levels.
Yep. 3-starring 10 levels.
Okay.
All by yourself.
Yeah,
are
that's
you
not
ready to be in the weeds.
I love Overcooked, but yeah, playing by yourself is a totally different game than playing as a co-op game.
Yeah. Well, we played it enough together, so
yeah,
it'll give you the experience to talk about playing the solo play.
That's true. Yeah, I haven't really played much of the solo play because it is such a great co-op game.
I'm so excited.
Yeah, I'm excited.
I love this game, so I'm excited to learn about the history and all that too. So
yeah.
All right. Well, man, that wraps up our first episode of season 3.
Yeah. Off to a good start. I can't
believe it. I'm excited about this season. We're going to have a lot of cool stuff happening, a lot of cool guests, a lot of cool surprises maybe.
Yeah.
Ooh, surprises. Ooh, maybe we'll have some secrets of our own, like Pixel.
what are you talking about?
You know, we had all those secrets in the game, Cave Story.
No, I mean for us to have. Oh, yeah, no, it's fine. Yeah, we'll probably have stuff.
We'll have stuff. All right. Well, we'll see you guys next time.
All right. See you.
Bye.
Bye.
As always, if you like our podcast, please leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or rate us on Spotify. Either of those would help us out a ton. Also, we would love to hear what you thought about Cave Story if you played it. Just hit us up on Instagram and give us your opinions. And again, we'll see you next time. Bye.